Hello, and welcome to the AAMFT podcast, your all-access pass to the latest news, developments, and thought leaders in the world of systemic therapy. We strive to relate, educate, and innovate one episode at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Karam, and we're brought to you by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. Our podcast explores topics that relationship-based therapists care about. In addition to featuring unique conversations and interviews with established experts, our show provides information and education on direct practice and emerging trends in the MFT profession. For more information, please visit us at aamft.org. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Therapy with Native American populations requires a deep respect for cultural traditions and practices. This journey into healing emphasizes a holistic approach centered on the individual's connection to their community, spiritual beliefs, and the natural world. Traditional Native American healing practices prioritize the inclusions of ceremonies, prayers, and much trust in community elders. These methods are seen as vital parts of the healing journey, offering a pathway to balance the emotional, spiritual, and physical states of individuals. There's a growing acknowledgement among systemic therapists about the need to integrate cultural practices to enhance therapy's effectiveness. Creating a culturally sensitive environment fosters comfort and acceptance, allowing for more open and honest therapeutic exchanges and building that alliance. A respect for these cultural values and traditions strengthens the therapeutic bond and increases the likelihood of positive outcomes. We're going to talk about that today with our guest, Dr. Laurel Myra, who is a member of the Red Lake Band of the Chippewa in Minnesota. There, she directs her tribe's wellness clinic, and she is an LMFT. She has practiced in the Native American community since 2007. She holds a master's degree from East Carolina University and her PhD in family social science and marriage and family therapy from the University of Minnesota. Her research focuses on Native American mental health, integrated health care, and training for healthcare professionals. She is a co-creator of the Indigenous Health Toolkit, a 7-module training for professionals working with Native American communities that she will speak about in our interview today. She started that work with her colleague, Dr. Melissa Lewis, that she met as part of the MFP, known as the Minority Fellowship Program at AAMFT. She holds seats on equity boards, including the State of Minnesota's Department of Health Equitable Healthcare Task Force. Despite the benefits of conducting systemic therapy with Indigenous populations, there's also challenges that we'll talk about with Laurel today, including issues of cultural appropriation, misunderstanding, often necessitating ongoing education and dialogue between therapists and Native American communities to minimize these challenges. And that's what we're doing today. I had a great dialogue. Laurel is a featured keynote speaker at next week's Leadership Symposium in San Diego, California. You'll hear me speak about that after our interview with Laurel. Eli, back with you on the AAMFT podcast. So happy to be joined by Dr. Laurel Myra, keynote speaker at the Leadership Symposium, a week from when this podcast is dropping next Friday. For those that don't know anything about you, Laurel, please tell us your MFT origin story. And we're going to be talking about working with Indigenous populations today, specifically Native American populations.
Yeah. So I am a Indigenous person. My mother is a Red Lake Band member who married a guy, my father, who is Scandinavian. So he has multiple different backgrounds. So I am half Native and half Scandinavian and grew up in the Red Lake Reservation, really enjoyed my childhood there. However, I did see quite a bit of health disparities and disparities socially and economically, and really had a heart for helping the community thrive and heal from some of the historical trauma that the tribe faced and ongoing racism that the community still experiences to this day. So that's why I decided to go into marriage and family therapy, very interested not only in helping the community heal, but also advocating on a higher level for change in policy and just seeing the community thrive.
What percentage do you know of MFTs are considered Native American or Indigenous?
Yeah, about 1% or under is the Native American population.
Certainly, minority clients like to look up and they like to see somebody that reminds them of themselves. So not only is this an underserved population, many of our listeners have never worked with a Native American client system. So what should those systemic therapists out there in our audience that are in the majority and non-BIPOC, what should they know about working with this population?
I think the big takeaway for people to know is just that Native people do experience higher levels of bias and racism in the healthcare system, just because there is such a lack of knowledge about tribes today. And historically, folks go into healthcare and a lot of times experience mistreatment. They experience lower access to healthcare, and including mental health. And they also do not receive as quality care. So that's actually research that's out there. So people come in a little nervous or don't come in at all when they're coming into a therapeutic space. And because Native people have had such negative experiences with mental health and healthcare in the past, as far as like really high disproportionate rates of removal of children from Native families by child protection, really there is a fear of that as well. So it's really hard for folks coming in to have that base level trust that others might be coming in with. And then they just have, you know, challenges with a lot of times poverty, education, inadequate education a lot of times. So some of those challenges really impact their ability to sometimes access services as well. One of the things younger therapists or newer therapists working with Native communities think is like they try to stick to these very Western thoughts about how we do therapy. And a lot of that doesn't work with Native people, especially some of the more marginalized communities that are suffering from homelessness at really high rates. Expecting them to adhere to a strict schedule is not necessarily going to be followed through with. So I think a lot of times when we're looking at our clinical policies and things, it's just really considering what everybody's dealing with and the heavy loads that people are carrying, even emotionally. So what they are bringing into the room and the fears that they have, and just being a little more understanding and a little bit more willing and empathetic to what they're up against in their day-to-day life.
What was it like for you growing up? Because you had both parts. You had the Scandinavian parts. Obviously, Minnesota is rich in Scandinavian culture and also rich in Native American culture. But for you, having one part of your Red Lake tribe and then one part Scandinavian, and certainly it's impacted your journey and your advocacy, which we'll talk about in a second, in doing the work. But I'm curious, growing up with dual citizenship, so to speak.
I think that's an excellent question, because it's something that I think a lot of people who are multiracial or who come from different cultural backgrounds really struggle with, which is that how people perceive you. In Native communities, sometimes I was perceived as more non-Native, and in white communities, perceived as more of an outsider. Being half and half, it really was an interesting experience in helping me to become more flexible and adaptable and also resilient. Also on top of that, like being a Christian, I think is a really interesting facet as well, because Native American people have really suffered by people who claim to be Christian or Catholic and have really perpetuated some of the worst painful history there and historical trauma. So I feel like a lot of the community, although there's a good portion that are Christian, there are people who really don't understand Christianity historically because they see it as being represented by the historical trauma piece, as opposed to like the biblical teachings and things like that. So that's also been a really interesting part of my journey as well.
So in working with Native American population, you mentioned these historical transgenerational traumas and injustices that Native Americans have suffered through. Because many times therapists, the majority, that they don't bring up these things because they're either not aware or they don't want to think they're going to hinder the alliance. But actually addressing it and putting a space where a client can talk about it, a Native American client, is probably adaptive. So how do these transgenerational traumas affect the work?
I always encourage therapists to show up authentically with humility about the history, whether they're Native or non-Native, so that they are showing up willing to hear what the client has to say about their experience. Some folks out there are really being discriminated against on a day-to-day basis because they're without housing. Some people are maybe look like they have more things together, but they're taking care of multiple family members and young and old, and are just up against a lot more challenges with a lot less resources than others might have. So just being willing to understand somebody's unique situation and not judging it. I think that a lot of what clients are experiencing as far as bias is that people are looking down on them because they're perceiving that this is their fault, as opposed to maybe what has happened to them in their lifetime, whether that's been discrimination or inadequate education and systems that are just not set up for their success, like the education system. And there's a lot more to say as far as like the treaty history and things that I think it's really important for providers to dig into and understand, so that they are coming in kind of from a place of being able to recognize that they represent some of these systems and some of this history, and that might actually be triggering for clients. So absolutely, being authentic and being humble about their lack of education and understanding about Native people and their history locally, and also their desire to learn and willingness to dig into that history and not just put it on the client to explain it all, but really arming themselves with that knowledge ahead of seeing clients, so that they can best be prepared to not judge and to listen to those stories.
I also think just like no ethnic group or minority would want to be lumped in all one category together. I imagine there is differences between tribes too, right? So you need to do some homework before you work with a population like this. But talk about the differences between tribes that probably our listeners should know how to find this information. If you're going to work with a client system like this and you've never worked with an Indigenous or Native American population before, where do you even go?
I would definitely start by understanding the local tribes. Here in Minnesota, we have 11 tribes. About half of them are Ojibwe and half are Dakota. And there's really rich history here. And some of it is really unfavorable to the government as far as thinking about the theft of land and things in Minnesota. And so I would start by just Googling like the state that you're in, the tribes in that state. We have people who are from across U.S. who come to utilize services here just because they've relocated to the area. but we also, majority of our folks are from a few of the larger Ojibwe tribes in Minnesota. So for example, if they were in Minnesota, I would think it'd be really interesting to just Google and read about the different tribes and read about the different history and treaties. If you look up the Native Serving Orgs in the area, you can hear about their origin stories. And a lot of times they do have to do with varying advocacy that they're working on. So that could be addressing inadequate education, I think of automatically comes to my head because I do a lot of work in the educational area. And it's just a big area of need in the community. So yeah, I would say that would be a good place to start, is just to start to understand the local history. Now, fun fact, when I was in my doc program at the University of Minnesota, I was honored to be accepted as a AAMFT minority fellow for a number of years. And one of the colleagues that I met, Dr. Melissa Lewis, and I and others developed an Indigenous Health Toolkit. And in that toolkit is 7 different modules. And we go from talking about social justice to talking about the history, the local history, talking about how healthcare systems are impacted and how they can do better. So all of these different areas, we have experts locally who talk on each of those areas. And over the years, we've presented these trainings to different groups, behavioral health. We've presented to whole clinics that have had their medical staff and their dental staff involved. And we've actually had success in decreasing bias in providers. So I feel like a lot of times that's like really unheard of, to be able to move the needle on bias, because it is so ingrained, but especially changing it with a training. I think some of it has to do with the fact that it's 7 modules and they're working with different facilitators and working with folks within their system. There's a level of comfort there and a level of trust that's happening in those systems. And everybody wants to do better, right? So I think there's definitely some pieces to doing this work that have really helped to move the needle on bias, but also the patient experience, right? Like they've experienced better healthcare as a result of some of this work that we've done with providers. So it's something that, you know, I'm really proud of, but there are a lot of resources out there. But that was just a gap that we saw early on, was that providers don't really know the communities. But this toolkit is something that other communities can take and tailor to their specific community. So obviously we have unique stories from our community that we share with providers here in Minnesota.
I love hearing about the MFP, the Minority Fellows Program. It builds such a community and our future leaders, which is certainly one of the reasons you're being featured at the Leadership Symposium this year. But what comes out of that is some products. So these modules are great. Now, I imagine part of the power is delivering that face-to-face. Is there an online way for our listeners to get those modules, or is that best delivered in person, face-to-face?
So that's a great question. We actually did do a number of virtual trainings during COVID, and more recently have invited those presenters to actually be recorded. So for the first time ever, we've developed a video series that is going to be available online. However, we do think that it is best going through with a facilitator. So we would encourage folks who are interested in having their system trained to reach out, and then we can help them basically fit it to their community. We would work with them and show them how to connect with their community so that they can use elders and their experts and leaders in their local Native communities to teach those modules, if that makes sense.
It does, and I think that sounds like a great resource. I would love to see that. Also, you mentioned earlier this dichotomy of Christians, Native American populations being skeptical as they were responsible for a lot of their historical injustices over the time. I just completed almost a year-long training in psychedelic-assisted therapy, and my work is converting that into systemic practices. But one of the things I learned there is the colonization of spiritual plant medicine practices from Westerners taking away from indigenous populations. The spiritual nature, Native Americans, I think it's so important in understanding that and respecting that to do the work. So talk to us about the use of plant medicine and other ceremonial rituals and how they functioned as resources in Native American communities, even to this day.
Yeah, thank you for queuing that up. I think that's an excellent question, especially because it is very central to our work. We actually have a medicine garden on site here at the clinic. So we have our traditional medicines growing in that, and that's something that we teach clients how to harvest. We have elders who will come in and do specific teachings on the medicines, and we want folks to be able to access it as they need so they can harvest some for themselves. And we have it year-round available for folks to take with them if they need that.
Non-Native American MFT or systemic therapist working with a population like that, understanding that not only that those plant-based medicines were criminalized many times and colonized, but how should a majority therapist even go about asking a Native American client system about plant medicine, how they use it in a way that, again, is respectful, not offensive, and that is culturally sensitive to what is such a powerful ritual and connection point in the Native American community?
Yes, I think that's a great question. We have a lot of people in the community who are great allies and who are providing therapy. And we encourage them to connect with community elders to provide those medicines. If they want to keep them on site, then they usually will have a go-to person that can provide those medicines. So I think of some of our hospital systems in the area here have been really good about having an elder on site or some sort of coordinator that can help with providing a ceremony on site if needed. And I know it's a very uncommon thing beyond some of these smaller communities that have done a lot of work in this area, but I would suggest that people not purchase it themselves and use it in session themselves with the patient. I think that could be offensive to them. I would suggest asking them if they have an elder that they are working with. And if not, I think it's totally appropriate to get a list together to provide people who don't have that but want it. And that's something that we do as well when folks might not have the funds to hire their own elder on site, but they want to incorporate these medicines, that they go ahead and refer people out for that.
Thank you for that. A lot of your work, as you said, has been advocacy. You do obviously micro work and working with the client systems and doing traditional systemic therapy, but I know your advocacy work is huge. So let's globalize the conversation. Even if our listeners are not serving Native American clients, how might our listeners integrate health equity strategies into their systemic practice as MFTs?
I think that's a great question. Again, I really ask people to advocate at their local place of work, because I think what happens sometimes is if somebody doesn't recognize that there are Native people in their client caseload, sometimes they're just providing typical care and it's a missed opportunity to dig into the culture and understand how they're functioning in their community, and might be an opportunity to enhance that. So I think a lot of times I would push back a little bit and just say there actually probably are Native people on your caseload. When they think about it, they might go back and look and see if somebody's put that in their chart. Or maybe it's just never been asked. I think sometimes we don't ask that question, and it's such an important part of who people are, their cultural background. So I would encourage people to start to ask where people are from and just learn a little bit more about their community that they're coming from. But then as they're starting to raise their awareness, also start to think about how to maybe advocate for more training about the Native American history and things. One of the really cool things that's happening here in Minnesota is we have a sacred sites tour that's provided by some local Dakota folks, and they actually go out and tour people around these different sites and talk about the significance, including how the land was taken. And health systems have done this, educational systems have done it, like teachers and things, and have just talked about how impactful that was to really understand what took place on the land right next door to us, like down the street from us in some cases. I think people don't realize how many Native people are actually probably, whether it be on their caseload or in their neighborhood or at their local community events. So I think just trying to increase that awareness and education, I think really does help to see a kind of invisible group around people sometimes. Because yeah, it's interesting to me when I talk to folks and they're like, oh, we don't really have a lot of Native people up in Duluth. It's, look, there's a huge tribal group that's right next to you there. So I think sometimes people are just kind of blind to the Native people around them. That whole idea of treating everybody the same and blindness sometimes can do some harm, because it's not seeing and appreciating the unique differences and experiences that different groups are having.
If you're in the minority of being an Indigenous systemic therapist, you already know everything Laurel is saying, and you're doing that. But you do not need to have a PhD like you do, or need to be of Indigenous descent to be able to be, as you said, an ally. So I know you are very proud of your advocacy work. Say briefly what you're the most excited about that part of your career, and then how our listeners that live in geographic areas where there are Indigenous Native American tribes, how they can become allies and join in doing this.
Excellent point. Yeah, so some of the work that I'm doing, I'm on some different hospital systems, community boards. Some hospital systems that are working with communities bring in folks from the community to help inform their policy and their care and address potential challenges that they're having. And that's something that's been super rewarding for me, to see systems really shift and change and have that humility to realize that they're not doing the best job and they could always do better. And so that's been something I've been really proud of. I've been doing that for a number of years now. But I've also had the opportunity to sit on a couple of state boards where the state has been invested in health equity. So that's everything from their funding, that's looking at what they're doing to shift changes in health disparities, and just looking to the community for advice and support. And those have been tremendously rewarding for me, and being able to see larger systems get on board and understand, not just from the Indigenous perspective, but also what other communities are struggling with, whether that's disabilities or BIPOC clients as well. So just really understanding how we can best serve communities that have been marginalized. That has been really something near and dear to my heart. But not everybody wants to take time to do that type of work. And I think that there's definitely opportunities to write letters and call your local representatives to support things that tribes are working on. You can learn about tribes' policies that they're working to address, for example, one of the areas that my tribe is working on is the theft of the northern part of our lake and the abuse of that land, a lot of littering and things from tourists, and just trying to regain not necessarily the land back, but be able to take better care of it and monitor access, making sure people are cleaning their boats, things like that, because there have been some unfortunate species introduced to our lake. And it's things like that that tribes really care about and really want to protect, protecting our ability to hunt and fish in on our lands and things like that. Some things like that are actually on the cutting board a lot of times and really a threat to our tribal sovereignty. I think if folks are interested in learning more about that, they can definitely look into their local tribe's priorities and help to raise an awareness of those challenges that they're facing.
You can preview the Leadership Symposium talk if your listeners have never been to AAMFT Leadership Symposium. It's an amazing way to network with people, young leaders, emerging leaders, more established leaders, but you are going to have a showcase there, I know, to talk about broader issues than we have touched on today, but give our listeners a preview, just ever so briefly, of your leadership talk.
I am really excited to go into a little bit more depth on the Indigenous Health Toolkit, but actually take a health equity perspective and really break that down for folks, help them understand how they can create maybe their own kind of action plans, whether that be to educate themselves more or, and not just specifically with Indigenous folks, although that's going to be some of the example I share, but helping folks to really think about how they can be a better ally and increase their way of thinking and support that they can lend to communities. And yeah, so it's really going to be breaking down how do you do this work, this health equity work, and ways, getting more into ways in which they can engage. And of course, sharing that example of the Indigenous Health Toolkit.
I can't wait to follow up with you and hear how that goes, and you getting an audience of like-minded systemic thinkers who can take those tools and make a difference in their communities. I can't thank you enough, Laura O'Meara. You are a great addition to our show and to our MFT community. Last thing, if our listeners want to continue the dialogue, tell us the best way to reach you.
They can definitely email me, probably is going to be the best way. And maybe use my work email might be the best one. So it's just laurel.myra@redlakenation.org. So my name is spelled LAURELLE and then .myra, MYHRA @redlakenation.org. Thank you so much for having me. I've just really enjoyed your questions and having this conversation. It's just been a pleasure.
Eli, back with you, bringing to close another informative installment of the AAMFT podcast, where we innovate, educate, and relate one episode at a time. But you can also do some innovating and some educating and work on your leadership skill set outside of the therapy room with the AAMFT at their annual Leadership Symposium. With AAMFT's continued focus on leadership development, this program is specifically designed to cultivate leadership excellence. It's structured to facilitate dynamic interactions with fellow trailblazers and current thought leaders, enabling you to confront and surmount the unique challenges and prospects that emerge in your professional journey as a systemic therapist. AAMFT invites you to delve into their Leadership Symposium. It's March 20th through the 22nd in beautiful, sunny San Diego. Embrace the opportunity to ally with us as we embark on a collective mission to elevate your leadership trajectory in 2025 and beyond. You can earn up to 11.5 continuing education credits here, not only amping up your knowledge, but your commitment to advancing the profession. You can even take it a step further If you're participating in the approved supervision refresher course, that's you can earn you an additional 6 CEUs to stay at the forefront of systemic supervisory practices in the world of MFT. So again, join us at the Leadership Symposium. It's an investment in your growth and your collective interest in MFT leading in and outside of the therapy room. Register now at aamft.org to redefine your career and your impact on the MFT profession. And speaking of leadership, when I think of some of my best experiences in the last 25 years as part of the AAMFT, I think of all the people I've met in service to this great profession. And on the top of that list is Tess Goodfellow. Those of us in the AAMFT community have been mourning her loss the last couple of weeks. I'm going to end in a way I have never ended a podcast. It's telling you a little bit about my friend and someone who was very influential behind the scenes at AAMFT, who built her career in service to a profession we loved so much. I'm reading from the AAMFT e-news that came out a couple weeks ago. AAMFT member and former board member, Teresa Tess Wiggins Goodfellow, has passed away. She's been a member of AAMFT since 1988, based out of Seattle, Washington. Tess was a skilled MFT with over 35 years of experience. She was a recipient of AAMFT's Outstanding Service Award in 2018. That was special because she received that in Louisville, Kentucky with me, where I was honored for my work with AAMFT. I'll never forget that moment. Tess once told her peers, "I've never thought I'd receive such a gift of friendship that had been cultivated over many years serving AAMFT. It's a sweet surprise that comes from leadership." President of the AAMFT, Adrian Blow, stated, "Tess was a much-loved member of the family therapy community. Not only was she a first-rate clinician, but for many, she provided a dedicated service. She served the Washington Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. In later years, she served at the national level as a dedicated board member of the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy, serving 2 terms. The first one she served with me, that's how we met. The second, she served as an officer. She was the secretary of an all-woman executive council. She is remembered as a warm and caring individual who brought people together and empowered them to believe in themselves. She will be deeply missed," Adrian says, and she certainly will. For me, Tess was more than a colleague at the AAMFT. She was a mentor, a guide, and eventually one of my dearest friends. But I'll be honest, it didn't start that way. In fact, Tess was not a fan of Eli at first. She thought I was aloof and dismissive, and I probably was. And she wasn't shy about telling me. But that was Tess. Honest, direct, but always caring. Her feedback wasn't about tearing people down. It was about helping them grow. And I'm so grateful she gave me a second chance. Because of her honesty and her belief in me, I became a better leader, better therapist, but most importantly, a better friend. Tess had a gift, a rare ability to blend strength and compassion. Her leadership was never about ego or titles. It was about people. She inspired those around her to rise higher, to do better, and to lead with their heart. Even after our time together on the AAMFT board ended nearly a decade ago, Tess remained a steady source of inspiration in my life. But I'll remember most is the laughter. Tess had a laugh that filled a room, big, warm, impossible not to join in on. We shared so many of those moments, many with my friends that I've had national service with, and one of those was Travis Johnson, who I know will probably listen to this, and we had great moments of deep conversation, but moments of complete silliness and everything in between. Even more than her service to AAMFT, one thing Tess was so proud about was her family. Her 2 daughters and her grandchildren were her heart. She spoke of them often, and she had so much pride and love. You could feel it radiating through every word every time we would talk about them. So to Bruce, to her daughters, and to her grandchildren, I hope you know how deeply she loved you, how fiercely she celebrated you, and how often she carried you in her heart, even when she was working. Whew, so this last couple of weeks have been rough. I'm so heartbroken, tested. We won't have one more dinner, one more laugh, or even one more cry together. But I am forever grateful for the time we did have. He left an indelible mark on my life and the life of so many others. In Tess's honor, I ask one thing for all of us. Reach out to someone you haven't spoken to in a while. Send that text, make that call. And don't wait for someday, because sometimes someday doesn't come. Tess reminded me that relationships, real relationships, messy relationships, meaningful ones, those are what make life beautiful. Let's not take them for granted. I love you, my friend. Rest easy, my jolly good fellow. Until next time, stay systemic.